on, true crime fans. I'm your host, Heath.
And I'm your host, Daphne.
And you're listening to Going West.
Hello, everybody. For those wondering, we did take Tuesday off. It was impromptu, but we needed it. So thank you all for understanding that we didn't come out with an episode a couple days ago. But the one we have for you today is crazy. I mean, I remember when the trial happened, and I'm sure a lot of you guys do as well, because it was just a few years ago, and it unraveled a wild and horrific story.
Yes, it really did. So thank you guys so much for tuning into this one. It's going to be an appalling ride. So without further ado, this is episode 398 of Going West. So let's get into it.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
In August of 2014, a 38-year-old California man was shot at work in what appeared to be a robbery gone wrong. But as detectives dug deeper into his personal life, a clear suspect emerged in the form of violent Bible analogies and poisoned pudding. Is the story of Robert Lamone. Robert Mendoza Lamone, or Rob as we're going to call him today, was born on August 11th, 1976 in Lake Havasu, Arizona, to parents Sharon and Robert Mendoza Sr. He grew up in a large, loving, working-class family and was known at his school for bringing homemade burritos to sell to classmates in order to help out with expenses at home. Like, that was the kind of guy he was. And to lean into that a little bit more, according to his family, Rob, quote, spread sunshine everywhere he went and touch the hearts of everyone he met. He was a naturally gifted athlete and played football for River Valley High School in Mojave Valley, Arizona, which is located about an hour north of where he was born in Lake Havasu. After graduating from high school, Rob stayed close to home and worked a string of odd jobs, just unsure about what kind of career path he wanted to go into, like many people just out of high school. But at the age of 21, Robert met a young woman named Sabrina who would change the trajectory of his life forever. Sabrina San Milan was born and raised in the desert, growing up in the Barstow area of California, which is just about 2 hours northeast of Los Angeles. It's like on the way to Las Vegas. Her older sister, Julie, described Sabrina as warm, loving, and gracious, and claimed that she had the gift of making anyone and everyone feel comfortable around her. She spent over half her childhood in the California desert before her family picked up and moved to Prescott, Arizona when she was 13 years old. And it was there, 5 years later, that she met Rob Lamone. At 18, Sabrina was a blonde and bubbly gal, and Rob was instantly drawn to her when they had met through mutual friends at a barbecue. After that, Rob excitedly told his family that he knew that he had met the woman that he was gonna marry. And 2 years later, in 2000, That's exactly what happened. He and Sabrina had their wedding in a large church ceremony because religion was something that they found together. Like, they found a church to start attending and were even baptized as adults. But Sabrina seemed more committed to that kind of lifestyle than Rob was, which would prove to kind of be a point of contention between them moving forward, as you guys are going to see.
So after their wedding, Rob and Sabrina decided that they wanted to leave Arizona, so they actually settled into an area that Sabrina grew up in, which is the California desert, and more specifically, they relocated to Hellendale, California, and found a home in Silver Lakes, which is like this small planned community centered around two man-made lakes. Now, the town is definitely remote, but it attracted many young families and retirees because of its year-round golfing, water sports, and just generally sunny weather. So Rob and Sabrina purchased a house along the water and were excited to settle into a laid-back lifestyle with the locals. With the help of Sabrina's sister Julie's husband, Rob got a job working for Burlington Northern Santa Fe, or BNSF Railway, which his dad had also done by trade. So soon after their move, Sabrina got pregnant, and the couple had two children, Robert III, or Robbie, and later a daughter named Leanna. And it was great because Rob's position with the railway was stable enough that Sabrina could stay home with their kids, and she loved being able to do that. Friends described the couple as amazing and attentive parents, and their neighbor Roxanne recalls, quote, "Sabrina was always so gracious. My children loved being around her. If I ever left my children with Rob, it was like leaving them with a big, tatted-out Care Bear. That was Rob, a sweet, loving man." So while raising their kids, Sabrina was still very connected to her faith and enjoyed taking the family to church and just getting the kids involved in it as well. But Sabrina and Rob also definitely had a fun side. They were both known for being outgoing, they made friends easily, and they just loved to host wild parties at their home. And like we see a lot on Going West, and we talk about this all the time, things really seemed perfect from the outside, with their friends remembering Rob and Sabrina being best friends, and that they were very affectionate and romantic with each other.
And there was this large group of young parents in Silver Lakes who called themselves the Wolf Pack.
Is that like a little ode to The Hangover or something?
I have no idea, and I don't know if other people called them this or they just called it to each other. Like, I don't really understand this, but
kind of interesting.
Yeah, they were a part of this group called the Wolf Pack, and also in the Wolf Pack was a couple named Kelly and Jason Bernatine, who wound up becoming best friends with Rob and Sabrina. Now, Kelly was actually Sabrina's hairstylist, which is how they met, and Jason was a firefighter. And after some time, the Lamone's friends, including Kelly and Jason, started to notice Sabrina's drinking was becoming more and more frequent. And although she never let it affect her parenting, she seemed to always have a drink in her hand. And of course, this is something they're noticing because this is, you know, their friend and they care about her.
Yeah, and it's definitely out of the ordinary for Sabrina.
Right. So Julie, remember, is Sabrina's sister, admitted, quote, "Sabrina was drinking so much all the time that she was pretty numb." And it was around this time in 2008 that the Lamones reportedly opened up their marriage. A female friend of Sabrina's who was not in the Wolf Pack even remembers being kind of like propositioned by Sabrina, asking if she and her husband wanted to join, you know, Sabrina and Rob in the bedroom. And regarding this, Sabrina later testified, quote, "We opened our marriage bed and it changed the dynamics of our sacred bond as soon as we made that choice together." Well, after they did, it seemed like Sabrina was having some second thoughts about it, and she was kind of masking the discomfort and doubt that she was feeling with alcohol. Another friend in their group, the Wolf Pack, recalled that it seemed even to their acquaintances that Rob and Sabrina's connection was suffering because of this open relationship that they were exploring. Rob even reportedly told Sabrina about a physical trait that he liked about one of her friends more than he liked about her, which was a trait that he wished Sabrina would change, and I don't know what that trait was, but so it was definitely affecting her.
Maybe not the best thing to say to your wife, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think after she, of course, was a part of the decision to do this, after they started, she's kind of thinking, well, maybe I don't want this.
Right.
Which is fair.
So as the children grew up and went off to school, Sabrina, who was a stay-at-home mom until 2012, decided that she was ready to re-enter the workforce part-time. She got a job working at the local Costco, handing out samples, and she also began reconnecting with her faith and just felt really drawn back to the church, just wanting to root her family in their spirituality again. Rob, however, seemed less enthused about returning to the church, and he was just kind of happy with their lifestyle and the way it was going. Then, in late 2013, Sabrina met a man named Jonathan Hearn, who was a big old part of this story. And he was a similarly motivated Christian man who approached her at Costco for a sample. Sabrina was 33 at the time, so 10 years older than Jonathan was, but she was taken by his maturity and his devotion to his faith.
It's so crazy to look at this part, to think about this later, like at the end of this episode, remember this part that they just met at Costco. So simple. He came up for a sample, and if he never did that, none of this would have happened. It's so crazy when you think about it.
It would have changed the trajectory of both of their lives, all three of their lives, really.
Yeah.
So Jonathan grew up in a deeply religious family in Hesperia, California, and was described as, quote, devout and chivalrous. Jonathan was well-known and well-liked. He had been a gifted student. He trained as a paramedic and then as a firefighter. But more than anything, he centered his life around God and longed for a traditional lifestyle. You know, just wanting to become a provider, a husband, and a father. So Sabrina was really taken with him because, again, at this point, she's, you know, trying to dive back into her spirituality, and this was all very attractive to her. She was drawn to his deep connection with God and his other aspirations and traits. So the two got to talking and exchanged numbers, and Jonathan posed the idea of becoming somewhat of a religious mentor to Sabrina. Which, I don't know, that sounds like it's already headed in the wrong direction.
Totally.
I mean, you would kind of think that she would be more of the mentor here since she's 10 years older, but I don't know, whatever. So she agreed, and they began to meet for lunches and coffees, chatting over their Bibles and praying together. And with Jonathan in her life, Sabrina began to move away from her party girl persona to become more like a tidy person, if you will. Someone that Jonathan would respect and admire. Friends and neighbors of the Lamones recall seeing him stop by her house often. He would cook for her, bring her flowers, and even spend time around her kids. And I gotta say, you know, the fact that he's cooking for her and bringing her flowers, what does that have to do with your faith in God?
Well, it doesn't, you know, that we're moving into this other direction.
Exactly. But, you know, they always kept it platonic, well, at least as far as the public was aware. Now, despite her relationship with Jonathan, Rob and Sabrina's friends and family recall that they still loved each other deeply, were devoted partners, and just wanted to prioritize their marriage.
August 17th, 2014 started off as any other Sunday. Rob and Sabrina and their two children, who were 11 and 8 years old at the time, were home enjoying breakfast together. It was less than a week after Rob's 38th birthday and 2 days before the couple's 14th wedding anniversary. Rob received a call from a coworker asking if he could cover a shift that day at the BNSF warehouse in Tehachapi, California, which is about 85 miles or 136 kilometers northwest of Hallandale.
So that's definitely a trek to get to work.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half drive from his family home, you know, to and from. So this was definitely, I mean, this was 3 hours in the car just to go to work. So this shift, it was a little bit later. So, you know, he's enjoying breakfast. He has enough time to get there for this shift. And that shift was set to conclude at 7 p.m. So Rob agreed to do it and headed off. But later that evening, Sabrina called her sister, Julie, nervously telling her that she wasn't hearing from Rob and that she was growing increasingly concerned about where he was. Their daughter's first day of school was the next day, and she was waiting up for him to say goodnight, so his absence was very much noticed. Sabrina continued to call him for hours and was not hearing back. Meanwhile, at the remote BNSF warehouse, the employee who was coming in to start his shift at the end of Rob's came inside to find him collapsed and bleeding out on the ground. So panicked and unsure of how long he had even been there on the floor, his coworker decided to call 911 and perform CPR until paramedics arrived. But sadly, 38-year-old Rob was too far gone, and he died before help could reach him. Well, get this. It was discovered that he had been shot twice, once in the chest and once in the face. He was found on the ground next to a refrigerator, which had blood spatters all over it. And in addition to the injuries that Rob sustained, the office of the warehouse, which was near where his body was found, looked like it had been ransacked. File cabinets had been emptied, and binders, papers, and folders were strewn across the floor. Everything was accounted for except for one laptop computer, so this whole thing at first glance appeared to be a botched robbery. But it's weird because Rob is dead, there's stuff everywhere, but there's only one thing missing. So it's like, why would somebody come in and murder somebody just to take a laptop?
Yeah, and it's not like this place is anything special. I mean, it's a railroad warehouse. You know what I mean? So it's not like this is like some undercover CIA shit. Like, you know, the fact that just that laptop is missing is so bizarre to me.
Yeah, it's a bit of a red flag. Because also, the warehouse is in a super quiet, secluded pocket of East Tehachapi with virtually no foot traffic or cars passing through. And again, the motive was hard to justify because Rob's cell phone and his wallet, which by the way was filled with cash, were both still present. Thus, investigators immediately had a hunch that the scene had been staged.
Well, after police notified Sabrina that her husband had been killed, she called her sister Julie, screaming and crying and begging her to come over. Julie then called Rob's sisters one by one and broke the news. Rob had last been spotted at work around 3 p.m., about the same time that Sabrina said that she had last heard from him. But his coworker came upon his dead body around 7 p.m., leaving a four-hour window for foul play to have occurred. The only activity on his phone had been Sabrina calling to check on him around 3 p.m., so there was no other activity to help with the timeline, but police kept pushing for answers. A few days later, Rob's memorial took place at a church in Hellendale, with hundreds of friends, locals, and family members in attendance. Sabrina looked every bit of the bereaved spouse, graciously greeting and thanking the guests for coming. She later took to Facebook to express her grief, writing, quote, "Robert showed his love, compassion, hardworking skills, and genuine kindness to everyone he met. I will never let Rob's love die or fade out. I will carry it with me wherever I go and remind our children of it daily as they grow." But no one, including Sabrina, seemed to understand why this loving, happy-go-lucky dad had been killed. Detectives spoke with Sabrina frequently in the week after the murder, and they recall that she definitely played up the part of the grieving spouse, reporting that there had been no issues in their marriage, and that she couldn't imagine who would want her beloved husband, the father of her children, dead. So investigators forged ahead with the few flimsy leads that they had. For example, they knew that the coworker that Rob was filling in for was apparently in a bad bar fight the evening before he asked Rob to cover his shift. So at first, police entertained the possibility that Rob was not the original target of the attack, but that it was actually supposed to be his coworker. But detectives managed to track down the guy that he had gotten into a fight with, but he was able to offer a solid alibi and clearly hadn't known Rob at all, nor had anything to do with his murder.
Then, a tip came in from the owner of a local gun store that a man had brought in his gun to be looked at, wanting to have the firing pin replaced. Now, this gun was similar to one that they believed could have been used to murder Rob. But what the store owner found odd was that the gun wasn't actually in need of any replacement parts. So he wondered if maybe the customer was just trying to get rid of the weapon that had been involved in a crime. He didn't think of this originally, but when the owner caught wind of the murder, he notified police about this encounter. Because after he heard about it, he's thinking, wait a second, this kind of weird thing happened at work. I wonder if this is connected, which is awesome that he called in. But Officers were basically able to track down the customer based on this tip, and it just turned out that he had an alibi and the gun, which was taken into ballistics and tested, was not connected to the murder, and the customer had no affiliation with Rob. Meanwhile, on security camera footage, they captured a man stumbling into the warehouse because there were cameras outside, by the way, and later stumbling out of it. He appeared to be an older man walking with a limp and carrying a large bag with him.
This is something very interesting to note. Remember that, you know, this person looks like an older man when we talk about this later.
Yeah, it's a really interesting piece. So this obviously raised suspicions immediately as, again, the warehouse was off the beaten path and saw virtually no foot traffic. So who is this person? This old man with a limp stumbling in and out on the same day that Rob was murdered. Detectives continued to scour the security footage of nearby businesses to see if they could match any more to this old man. And in doing so, they found a building down the street whose cameras captured a man on a black motorcycle circling the area around the same time as they believed Rob's murder occurred. Though they couldn't be sure of the identity of the driver or the exact make and model of the motorcycle, they knew via DMV records that someone in Rob's circle drove a motorcycle. Sabrina's friend, Jonathan Hearn. With how busy our schedules are, Heath and I are constantly ordering food and groceries from DoorDash. It just saves us a ton of time when we can't run to the store for ingredients or don't feel like cooking and want delicious takeout instead. But delivery fees can definitely add up, and this is why we have DashPass by DoorDash.
DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, as well as member-only deals and discounts.
Which is why DashPass is the most affordable way to get anything and everything you need delivered right to your door, and fast, for just $9.99 a month.
Which means DoorDash quickly pays for itself in just 2 orders on average. So whether you order every day or just a couple of times a month, you'll save with DashPass.
Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything that you need to sell in person.
I absolutely love Shopify. I launched my coffee company, Elder's Coffee, with Shopify in December, and it has been such an amazing process. I seriously could not recommend Shopify more.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way.
And they really do. So what are you waiting for? Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/goingwest, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/goingwest to take your retail business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/goingwest. As true crime listeners, you're aware of the dangers out there in the world. So why not keep your home as safe and secure as possible? Daphne and I do this by using SimpliSafe. For award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you.
When we get ready for our summer trips this year, I will feel so much better about leaving the house knowing that SimpliSafe has our back, just freeing me from my constant anxieties. And also, something I love is that their system blankets your entire home in protection, from break-ins to fires to floods. And with indoor and outdoor cameras to choose from, you will feel safe any time of day or night.
And SimpliSafe is backed by 24/7 professional monitoring agents to help stop crimes in real time.
Which is part of why they were named the best home security system of 2024. SimpliSafe has given us and so many listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/goingwest. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
When police analyzed the surveillance footage of the nearby business that captured the black motorcycle cruising by at the time of Rob's murder and compared it to Jonathan's motorcycle, they believed that they had found a match. It was a pretty distinctive bike because the black Yamaha motorcycle read "Forgiven" in white letters with a cross on the side.
Don't see too many of those.
No, you really don't. That is very distinctive.
Super.
So detectives were also able to pull surveillance footage from a nearby gas station that showed what resembled the same driver and bike pulling in, with the driver clad in a black helmet with a black tank top, shorts, sunglasses, and shoes, plus a red bandana tied around his neck. He pulled up to the gas pump shortly after the murder was believed to have taken place and went inside to buy a drink. This mysterious biker also matched the description of the man seen at the scene of the crime. Then, 2 weeks after Rob Lamone's murder, lead detective Robert Meyer received a tip from a surprising source: the Lamone's best friends, Kelly and Jason Bernatine. On a night out before Rob's death, the two couples and some other Silver Lakes friends were out at a bar together. Jonathan had popped in and was introduced by Sabrina as her, quote, Bible study partner. But Jason remembers being alarmed at how physically affectionate they were with each other, especially in Rob's presence. And weeks later, Jonathan called Jason, seemingly out of the blue, asking for Rob's phone number. So Jason, who happened to be with Rob at the time, handed the phone over to him instead of passing along his number. And from what Jason could gather from the conversation, Jonathan was basically apologizing for the intimate and inappropriate physical relationship that he had with Sabrina. Now, Rob had already been suspicious of this based on the nature of their relationship, because as Sabrina and Jonathan began to grow closer, Rob noticed text messages that he felt crossed the line, but Sabrina assured him that she had not been physical with Jonathan and that she would never do such a thing. And she even told him that she would end the relationship with Jonathan to salvage their marriage if Rob preferred that she do so. So Rob told Jason that he was working through it with Sabrina and that he would be able to forgive her eventually.
Now, obviously, they had been open before. I kind of want to clear this up because I'm sure a ton of you are wondering. You know, they saw other people together before this, you know, in the years before this. But what Sabrina was doing was different. She seemed to be sneakily seeing someone else by herself. And it wasn't just physical. You know, they were bringing people into their shared relationship. It wasn't like, I'm going to go have a relationship with somebody else. She is having an emotional affair, essentially, and a physical affair. So it's very different from what they had done before with their marriage. But she seemed apologetic, and so he kind of let it go. But months later, long after Sabrina assured Rob that she was taking space from Jonathan, Kelly Bernatine spotted Sabrina at her job at Costco talking with Jonathan while she was on her work break. When Kelly asked her about it, Sabrina became super defensive and apparently told Kelly, quote, mind your own business.
That's your best friend. I mean, that seems a little over the top to say something like, mind your own business.
Yeah, I think her getting defensive about it, I think she knows that she's doing something that she shouldn't be, but she doesn't want to not do it. She wants to keep this up with Jonathan because clearly she's very into him. So Jason stepped in on Rob's behalf here, warning Jonathan to stay away from Sabrina. You know, because they're looking out for Rob's best interest. But just 4 months later, Rob would be dead. After the murder, Jason, not Rob, obviously, received a strange, guilt-ridden voicemail from Jonathan apologizing for the affair, which Jason later described as unstable and emotional. Shortly after leaving the voicemail, Jonathan also wrote a handwritten letter to the Bernatines where he apologized for being prideful, selfish, and disrespectful, and admitted to sinning.
God, this guy is so weird. Like,
why are you apologizing to the friends? That's just so strange.
Yeah, you know, it's to the point where everybody's just asking you to leave this couple alone, just stay out of their lives, and just back off, dude.
Yeah, it's very weird. Now, although he never explicitly confessed to having any involvement in Rob's murder, Kelly and Jason had seen enough. This, to them, seemed as valid an argument as any that Jonathan had possibly been involved in the murder of Rob Lamone. So they shared the information with the police. And finding this development pretty incriminating, police subpoenaed both Sabrina's and Jonathan's phone records and found dozens of calls between the two in late 2013 and early 2014. Now, obviously, this is months before Rob's murder, but it's kind of interesting because these calls stopped abruptly around the time that Rob found out that they were kind of in this relationship. But then Jonathan started receiving a bunch of calls from an unknown number, and police believed that this was just Sabrina calling on a burner phone. So investigators wiretapped both of these numbers, obviously secretly, and quickly became privy to an intense physical and romantic relationship between Jonathan and Sabrina that was in full swing, even after Rob's death.
Outside of their possible involvement in the murder of Sabrina's husband, she and Jonathan spoke of themselves as star-crossed lovers. They discussed their belief that God led them to each other and wanted them to be together. They talked about how much they loved each other and their plans for the future, which included having children of their own while raising Rob and Sabrina's kids together. And though they never addressed or admitted to Rob's murder directly, they spoke vaguely about their devotion to each other. Jonathan was recorded telling Sabrina, quote, "Whatever happens, however it goes, I love you, I love you, I love you. To the end of the world, I love you." He also compared their relationship to that of Bathsheba and David in the Bible, the story of King David sending Bathsheba's husband Uriah into battle after committing adultery with her and getting her pregnant. Jonathan told Sabrina, quote, "David is a lot like you and I, Sabrina. He was someone who committed adultery. Actually, that's what Psalms 51 is about. He had an affair, and then he even went on to kill the guy, like send him into battle and pretty much had him killed off." Jonathan and Sabrina would pray together often on the phone, and when they spoke to God, Jonathan called him and Sabrina dirtbags and selfish and said that they had sinned.
This just makes me, like, it always drives me particularly nuts when very religious people murder their spouses, but they claim to be these amazing, like, holier-than-thou people. You know, he's saying, oh, we're sinning and whatever, but then he's comparing them to this part of the Bible as if cheating and killing is okay, because that's pretty much what happened in the Bible. That's pretty much what happened with David and Bathsheba. Like, what?
And also, if you're calling you and your mistress or your girlfriend sinners and dirtbags, then why the hell are you even doing this in the first place?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
But that's what's annoying is he's saying, oh, we're sinners, but we're doing it anyway. Like,
yeah.
What is right and wrong here?
It almost feels to me like by him saying that they're dirtbags, it's like, well, you know, at least we're like trying to be forgiven for our sins. We know that we're dirtbags and sinners, and we're calling ourselves that, so it makes the crime like less bad in his eyes.
Which makes it so much more annoying and insane. And detectives are hearing and seeing all of this back and forth, so they decided to work against Sabrina and Jonathan in hopes of tripping them up and coercing a confession. Detective Robert Meyer called Sabrina and relayed that they finally had a break in the case after weeks of no forward momentum. He explained that a tall white male had been seen fleeing the scene on a motorcycle and that they had recovered DNA from the scene of the crime in the form of a sweat drop that they would potentially be able to trace back to the identity of the killer. And Sabrina actually said in a sprightly tone, "Oh, really? That's great." You know, she's been putting on an act this whole time.
Yeah, of course.
But as soon as she hung up the phone, she called Jonathan immediately. Now, although she didn't implicate either of them, she warned him in a very calm tone, unlike the heightened sense of emotion that she had in her call with Detective Robert Myers, that police were potentially inching closer to an arrest. Jonathan responded flatly, quote, "I wouldn't be surprised if they were listening right now." To which Sabrina agreed, saying, quote, "This is just so crazy. I can't believe any of this. Like, I can't believe any of it." Based on that phone call, along with the months of incriminating conversations, as well as the connection of the motorcycle, police finally felt like they had enough information to arrest them. So on November 18th, 2014, 3 months after the murder of Rob Lamone, Jonathan was arrested at the fire station where he worked, and Sabrina was arrested upon arriving home with her children. And her neighbors obviously just watched in shock as she was loaded into the back of a police car for a crime that she swore she had not committed.
And even though both parties proclaimed their innocence, Jonathan refused to talk to detectives, and he secured an attorney immediately. But Sabrina obliged and was interrogated by police for hours. Hoping to scare a confession out of her, they told her honestly that they believed Jonathan was guilty and that he was going to be in prison for a very long time. But after hours of questioning with no confession, they arrested Sabrina for conspiracy to commit murder and accessory to murder. And for those wondering, Sabrina's sister Julie was asked to care for her children while Sabrina was detained. Now, Sabrina denied knowing anything or being involved in the murder at all, and said that, to her knowledge, Jonathan had not been involved. During this time, both of their homes were searched, but no evidence was found that could incriminate either of them, and no murder weapon was recovered either. So, without sufficient evidence, police were forced to release Sabrina from custody, though they were able to maintain the detention of Jonathan, who pleaded innocent on Thursday, November 20th, 2014. But the public's opinion in the small, tight-knit community had already soured against Sabrina, and she was pretty much forced to leave the town. Sabrina moved herself and her two children 2.5 hours west to Camarillo, California, which is in Ventura County, to be closer to her sister Julie. And for 2 years, Sabrina was able to live her life as any other suburban mom, and even received sympathy when she told new friends and neighbors that her husband had been murdered. While Jonathan remained behind bars, detectives felt that their case was slipping away from them, with Sabrina avoiding any implication due to lack of evidence. So, the district attorney offered Jonathan a plea deal. Testify against Sabrina, and they would reduce his sentence. Well, Jonathan agreed, and finally admitted to shooting Rob Lamone, but he added that Sabrina was a willing participant, and in fact, she wanted this done. So, he rolled over on Sabrina when they were like, "Hey, we'll give you a plea deal."
I mean, who wouldn't, you know?
Yeah. She's just out there free living her life and he's detained. Like, come
on. The whole reason that Rob was killed is because he was the one that was quote unquote in the way. And he was the one that was married to Sabrina. So this was because of Sabrina. Jonathan's not married to the guy, you know?
Yeah. And it probably felt like a massive slap in the face when she just took off 2.5 hours away and just left him in the dust.
Oh, yeah.
So by his account, Sabrina saw the murder as her only way out of her marriage to Rob Lamone, a marriage which she told Jonathan had been spiraling out of control for a very long time.
By the way, murder is the worst way out of a marriage, but okay.
Get a divorce.
Jonathan alleged that Rob had been pressuring Sabrina to engage in their very sexual lifestyle, swinging with other couples and attending sex parties together. Remember, this was going on for a few years. But according to Jonathan, she began to feel degraded, demeaned, and used, which was why her drinking had become out of control a few years earlier. Well, when Jonathan swept in, you know, this godly man who wanted to save her. Sabrina was instantly smitten and wanted her husband out of the picture by any means necessary, except, of course, the normal and legal route of divorce. As their feelings developed and their affair grew physical, they hatched a plan to get rid of Rob. And Jonathan explained that he had advised Sabrina to simply divorce Rob, but that she didn't want the legal trouble or the custody battle. And imagine how much easier emotionally, legally, physically it would be to divorce a kind, non-abusive man and just be divorced than it would to carry out a murder plot and either live with the guilt and fear of getting caught forever but not actually getting caught, or actually get caught and then go through that legal battle. Like, how is murder ever a considerable option?
Yeah, and now your kids don't have a father or their mother because you're in jail, you moron.
How is that worth the risk?
Well, crazy as it seems to use this as fuel, Sabrina told Jonathan that Rob would rather be dead than divorced.
Maybe Rob should decide that, you know, like, and considering he was very willingly a part of an open marriage, I feel like it wouldn't be worse than death to him or anybody, but okay.
Yeah, sounds a little insane.
So Jonathan later testified at Sabrina's trial, quote, "It was inevitable that Rob needed to die for Sabrina and I to move forward with our relationship. How is that working out now? Like, are you happily together now that Rob's dead?"
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
So Sabrina stood to gain $300,000 from Rob's life insurance policy as well. So that just adds a little bit more fuel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, obviously, that was not the main reason, no. But a little incentive, I guess, there.
Yeah. And Jonathan also revealed a very shocking new piece of information during his confession, that their successful murder plot of shooting Rob at work was actually their second attempt on Rob's life.
This next part is so insane, it blows my mind.
It's ridiculous. So before the couple planned to shoot Rob while he was at work, they had attempted to poison him. So just before his murder in August of 2014, Sabrina made one of Rob's favorite desserts, banana pudding with vanilla wafer cookies on top. Jonathan claims that he himself stirred the arsenic into the pudding, which Sabrina then put into a plastic container and packed in his lunch. But at the last minute, she got cold feet and called Rob at work and told him that the bananas had gone bad and that he shouldn't eat it.
It's wild to me that she tried this first, but I think also she probably knew that it might be traceable if they found arsenic in his system and might be questioning her anyway.
Oh, it would have been so easy for them to figure that out.
But then, you know, they went through with plan number two, which was attack him and stage a murder as a robbery gone wrong. And according to Jonathan, Sabrina knew his work schedule and day-to-day movements intimately. So she helped Jonathan figure out when to strike and likely even called Jonathan to go after him as soon as she found out that Rob would be willing to fill in for the coworker on that Sunday. So on the afternoon of August 17th, 2014, Jonathan drove his motorcycle to the warehouse with his .45 caliber handgun. Dressed in all black with a mask covering his face, Jonathan parked some distance away from the warehouse and covered himself to look like a pedestrian simply just passing through, adding a limp to throw off investigators as they watched the surveillance footage.
Which is so interesting that police watched it and said, oh, that looks like an old man with a limp, and it was a very young man with a fake limp.
Exactly, yeah. So after shooting Rob, Jonathan quickly grabbed a laptop from the desk and then thrashed the office. As he did, he could hear Rob gasping for air and realized that he had to finish the job. So he shot Rob again, then quickly closed the garage behind him and left, stopping at the gas station on his way out of town.
Which is what got him caught.
Exactly. Now, he and Sabrina spoke on the phone shortly after, and both claimed that they were relieved and prepared to move forward together.
That's so messed up to carry it out and feel relief after.
Yeah, I mean, no remorse whatsoever. So with Jonathan's admission, Sabrina was brought into custody once again. And finally, on January 7th, 2017, Sabrina was arrested at her home in Camarillo for her part in Rob's murder. However, there was still no physical evidence tying Sabrina to the crime. She maintained that she was never planning on leaving her husband, regardless of the affair, and that she was blindsided by the news that he had been murdered. But her behavior in the immediate aftermath of her husband's murder said otherwise. Police revealed texts that she had written to Jonathan, including one that read, quote, "Oh, how I love you. I adore you, Jonathan Hearn, you sexy guy." The prosecutors built their case around knowing that the two had never outright confessed to the murder in their wiretapped phone calls. They were very careful to just dance around certain topics. When her highly anticipated trial began, Sabrina was put on the stand to testify on her own behalf, and claimed that she was manipulated under the guise of spiritual guidance, but that she never wanted to kill or even leave her husband. Bullshit. She blamed Jonathan for every aspect of the murder and claimed that she possessed no prior knowledge of the plan. Like, they basically just rolled on each other.
But we know in text messages and from the phone calls that she is saying that she loves Jonathan. So to claim that he is manipulating her because he was her mentor, I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, it feels like a very convenient defense. Like, oh, it was all him. Like, he was, you know, stalking me. He loved me so much that he was willing to kill my husband to be with me. No, you were involved. You know you were involved.
Well, also because remember, there's so many little things that lead this to make sense. On the day that Rob was killed, that morning, she called Jonathan, of course, to tell him the plan was a go. Today's the day. After she got that call from police where the detective said that they think they know who did it. Who did she call right after hanging up?
Jonathan.
So obviously she is in constant communication with him because this was a joint plan. And she's just trying to get away with it and pin it all on John, which is just so messed up. So the jury was pretty skeptical of the whole situation. But in the end, Sabrina was found guilty of her husband's murder.
And by the way, I just want to quickly clarify that we have zero sympathy for Jonathan either, like they're both pieces of shit.
Oh, I'm not saying like, oh, poor Jonathan. No. Obviously, this man literally killed somebody and killed an innocent, wonderful man.
We just wanted to point out how manipulative it is that she is trying to pin it all on Jonathan.
Yeah, they are both guilty here. So on October 5th, 2017, Sabrina was found guilty on 4 of the 6 counts that she was accused of, including first-degree murder, attempted murder, solicitation of murder, and conspiracy to commit murder. But she was acquitted of attempting to poison him via the banana pudding because the jury just didn't feel like there was enough evidence to prove that she did, which makes sense. This is, you know, I still think it happened, but I understand that they're not able to prove that months later. So Sabrina proclaimed her innocence to the bitter end and was described as cold and unaffected throughout the duration of the trial, desiring nothing but blamelessness, and showed no sorrow for her husband's death nor remorse for her involvement. Sabrina, who is now 44 years old, was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison and began serving her sentence at the Woman's Correctional Facility in Corona, California. She cried silently as the verdict was read, and her attorney was visibly outraged. In an interview with her sister outside the courthouse following the guilty verdict, Julie said, quote, "She didn't do this. I know that. She's an amazing mother, amazing person. She would never do anything like this."
Okay, a little bit biased there.
I mean, I understand why her sister, this is probably a huge shock, especially because in the beginning of this episode, we said so many amazing things about Sabrina. Everybody in her life had nothing but great things to say about her as a mother and as a person.
Yeah.
But this was a horrible, horrible thing that never should have happened.
And I mean, sometimes people who seem like they're really good and great people do awful things.
Absolutely. But to this day, Julie maintains that the judge and jury made a mistake, saying, quote, "That was not the right verdict." Rob's family, however, was thankful for the closure and feels that justice was served. On November 16, 2017, Jonathan accepted the predetermined sentence as outlined in his plea, amounting to 25 years and 4 months, but was convicted of manslaughter instead of first-degree murder per the terms of his plea deal. At his sentencing, he read a heartfelt letter to Rob's family that read, quote, "The mercy that I've been shown is not lost on me. Even isolation and misery is a generous piece of real estate for someone of my offenses. Your Honor, I consider the profound impact of my decisions, and I realize there are many others whose lives I've affected, and I owe a heartfelt apology to. I hope to get the opportunity to repent to each of these in time. I have wept and struggled searching for adequate words to express my repentance. Saying I'm sorry to you all will never be enough. So speaking on borrowed and undeserved breath, I offer you my broken-hearted and genuine apology, knowing it cannot compare to the grief I caused all of you." Through tears, he concluded, quote, "I offer you my broken-hearted and genuine apology. To Robert's friends and family, I am so sorry." He also wrote letters to both of the couple's children, expressing his regret for his actions. And what a gnarly thing to receive after such a messed up and traumatizing ordeal involving your parents.
Yeah, nobody cares about your letters, guy. So in 2022, Sabrina attempted to appeal her conviction. With her new legal counsel, she argued that her attorney should have never let her testify on her own behalf at her trial. However, her attorney claims that she wanted to do so, and in fact, insisted upon it. Because this was such a high-profile case in the area at the time, her team argued not enough effort was made to protect the public from being exposed to the massive amount of media coverage about the case. She continued to claim that there was no proof that Jonathan had not acted alone, but the prosecution argued, quote, "Evidence independent from Hearn's testimony conclusively connected Sabrina with Robert's murder. The prosecution established that appellant was deeply in love with Hearn both before and after he killed her husband. Lamone provided Hearn with critical information that permitted Hearn to confront and shoot Robert when Robert was working alone on an unexpected extra shift on August 17, 2014, and she repeatedly lied and provided false leads to law enforcement during its investigation following this murder. Based on Hearn's corroborated testimony, overwhelming evidence established appellant's intent to solicit Robert's murder, her intent to kill, and her intent to conspire with Hearn to commit murder." Sabrina's appeal was eventually denied, and she remains incarcerated to this day. The most affected by the tragedy were Rob and Sabrina's young children, who've been caught in the crossfire since their father was taken away from them. Julie said woefully, quote, "The kids don't have a father, and now they don't have a mother. And I look at them in the face, and they are in so much pain." Sadly, Rob's sisters claim that Rob and Sabrina's children have been mostly kept away from Rob's side of the family, moving in with their Aunt Julie and not permitted to keep in touch with Rob's sisters.
Which is so messed up. I mean, especially if Julie thinks that her sister is innocent and that she didn't kill Rob, then she should still have sympathy for Rob and his family.
Yeah.
So that's just super messed up.
I mean, why isolate Rob's kids from his side of the family? It just makes no sense to me. But anyway, Rob's sister Lydia stated, quote, "The last I heard, they didn't want to talk to me." Robert's sisters have maintained that Sabrina was the mastermind behind their brother's murder.
Oh, wait, that's right. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Now that you say that. Wait, yeah, I forgot that. His family very much thinks that she was involved, so maybe Julie is hurt by that.
Yeah, probably. And Lydia also said that they would rather have seen Sabrina take the fall for her actions instead of Jonathan.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of Going West.
Yes, thank you guys so much for checking out this episode. Again, thank you for being understanding about Tuesday's episode not coming out. Daphne and I needed a little bit of extra time for this case this week, so we took it, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it. But we will be back next week with your regular two scheduled episodes.
Indeed, and we are, those two will be $3.99 and then $400.
Yeah, crazy. We're almost at 400 regular episodes on Going West.
Crazy. Thank you guys so much for getting us here and staying with us and continuing to listen to the show. It means the world to us. If you love our show, feel free to leave a review on Apple or Spotify. It really helps our show and lets us know that you guys still love being here with us.
Yeah, and it also brings Daphne and I a very large smile to our faces.
It definitely does. So thank you guys so much. If you want to check out photos from this case, head over to our socials. We're on Facebook and Instagram, and we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. So for everybody out there in the world,
don't be a stranger.
Of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.